Welcome back to the Boys and Bolos podcast. We're down here in the barbershop studio. Jarrett, you had a wild weekend. We're recording remotely. You're quarantining. We'll find out the results of that mid-pod. I'm looking forward to it.
You've just taken the test. I feel like absolute dog shit. I feel like Liverpool feel currently. Put a lot of effort out there and I failed.
It didn't look like they actually put that much effort out there, to be perfectly honest. It looked like United was trying a bit harder, but that's neither here nor there.
Maybe that's Chelsea. Maybe Chelsea tried harder and had an actually worse outcome than Liverpool. So I don't know.
To be fair, they probably used up a lot of their mojo the previous week at Stamford Bridge when they played Spurs. They were away, Ellen Road. And, you know, Jesse Marsh has got his team firing, you know.
The dad genes and knowing that the guys are coming off and they're hearing a U.S. English accent. What more can you ask?
I thought the lineup that Chelsea put out, and let's just put this out there. Gallagher and Ruben Loftus-Cheek are not the midfield you want. I know Tuchel didn't have a lot of options, but it was a little bit disrespectful to Leeds to put those two guys out there and think that
that's
was
what I was
win
thinking.
The game.
That's the thing that came to my mind, too. And I'm like, dude, like, we got to take them seriously. Leeds, you know, like playing Leeds is like playing a high school team. They're just a track. They're a bunch of track stars, and they can actually also play. Like, Brendan Aaronson is a very, very, very good player. He's going to continue to cause problems, and I do not think he stays at Leeds more than two seasons. I don't care what his contract says. He's going to get bought by a bigger club.
Sure.
If I'm Christian Pulisic, I'm bullshit because I'm like, I'm better than that guy, but he's starting on a team that's beating my team. That doesn't sit well.
No, I there's something to be said. I was talking to Jeff Cronin today, and I was like, yeah, I don't think Tuchel likes Christian. Whether he thinks he's not durable enough, he's not, I don't know, maybe he's not fully fit. Maybe he's worried about getting injured. Maybe he doesn't think he's skilled enough to play against. But the bottom line is that I know that Sterling's now playing kind of on the same, you know, on that side, and maybe Sterling does deserve the run of play. But, I mean, they bought Christian for $60 million or whatever it was. And the guy's seen so little playing time in the last 20 games that it's criminal. The guy is literally is he the captain of the U.S. men's national team? And he's the best player in the team, I mean, easily. But he can't find playing time in the Premier League? I mean, that's ridiculous. He needs to go someplace else. And I was saying maybe United's the place, but as we saw today, maybe United isn't the place. I don't know. He needs to play for a team. He needs to play. He just needs to play. And it's getting to be a bit like, if you're a U.S. men's national team fan, if you're a U.S. soccer fan, you get a little bit concerned about the situation that's happening there, him getting iced out.
I obviously don't want him to leave because I'm a Chelsea fan and it's great to have him there. But if he's not going to play anywhere, dude. I don't care. Play at Arsenal. Play anywhere. I don't care. Just he has to get PT. The World Cup's less than like 90 days away. He needs to be playing at full speed because if you have Reyna, who I don't even know if he's healthy because the kid's always hurt. Another Borussia Dortmund problem with fitness. You have Reyna and Christian and Brendan Aaronson all playing in the top three. And then you have Weston McKennie and Tyler Adams holding. And they do a 3-5-2, which is what I think they should do because I don't think we have two good center backs to play out of a four back. Then that team, you don't want to play that team. You have these three dudes up top that are just going to run all over you. And you have Tim Way. Well, anyways, we should do it. We should do U.S. men's national team special eventually. But the point being, Christian needs to get time. And it's shocking to me. Like, if United want to take him on loan, but they're going to play him because they don't really have other things, like, he's better than Martial. Rashford had a great game today, but I think he's on the level of Rashford, honestly. And I know maybe other people may not agree with that, but like when Christian's firing on all cylinders, he's a beast. He's an absolute beast. He's so quick over 10 meters. So I want to see him get time. I don't know where that's going to be. I'm open to anything. I don't care.
Even Robinson on Fulham and who's a center back. He's also American. Who's been there forever.
Zimmerman, or you're talking
the
blonde
Fulham
dude.
Center back who's like old.
Tim Ream.
Even those two guys are getting more playing time than Christian. It seems like every starting player on the U.S. men's national team is getting playing time except for Christian. You got Robinson. You got everybody.
I don't care where he goes. Go play for
maybe not Weston
Miami FC. I don't actually care. I don't care if he's playing at high school. He needs to just be playing games. There needs to be competition. So, and I know that there's probably the argument to be made that he's, you know, playing week in and week out with absolute, you know, world-class players. But like you said the other day, if he's not getting full real-time touches, PT, getting stuck in tackles, etc., you can't account for it. So it is detrimental to U.S. men's soccer team. But what are the games that you want to focus on this week? I think
I do want to talk about the upcoming games, but we have to talk about the elephant in the room, and that is Manchester United versus Liverpool. And the question is, and this was posed before the game started, and you know, I think it remains now, is that what team, you know, United lose, you know, they're still a dumpster fire, they're still in a lot of trouble. Liverpool now has 5 points and they're on the right track. But Liverpool loses. Are they the ones who are in trouble? You know, have United righted the ship? You know, for me, I think United conceding a goal, Liverpool actually looking a little more dominant second half, especially after Milner came off, especially when they put on, I think Carvalho was actually looked pretty good. Going forward, I don't think Firmino added a lot this game, but to me, it was both teams. It looked like, to me, instead of United being back on track and being this, you know, whatever top team, and Liverpool suddenly being a dumpster fire, I actually think it just makes both of them look susceptible to being beaten. I think they both look mediocre. I think if you're a Spurs fan, a Chelsea fan, a City fan, an Arsenal fan, you're like, all right, sick. Both teams kind of suck. Like, this is sweet. Table is wide open. And the other teams too. Like, obviously Fulham got a point against them. You know, pretty much every other team, like Newcastle, all these mid-table teams, are like, well, Liverpool's, you know, susceptible to being beat. United are kind of still a mess. They don't know how to. They got one good result, but they still conceded a goal and almost gave away a goal. I mean, they're still kind of a train wreck. For me, it didn't. Like, it wasn't like a statement from either team. It just really kind of shows like the state of both of those teams. And, you know, I think United were at home. I think Liverpool has not been firing. I think Liverpool have a lot of injuries. I think the Nunez suspension hurt them today. So that's how I felt about it. If you're a supporter of any other club in the league, you're saying, oh, both teams look pretty poor.
That was an amazing synopsis, because you hit on a couple points that I wanted to bring up. And if anyone else is looking around, you're like, well, the two most winningest clubs in English football history are kind of susceptible to being taken advantage of. They are also struggling to find identity. They have coaches, like, obviously Klopp is, you know, he's got his culture in there. Ten Hag is still finding his way. I think you said it in text. You were like, this is United's peak, and this is probably Liverpool's low. So that still has me thinking United are in somewhere between 7 to 10. I don't really know. They have a center back pairing with Varane, who has not played well, to be frank, in two seasons, with another guy who's 5'9". Over the long period of time, I don't think that's going to work out. So Harry Maguire is going to have to come back in, or some other Jamoke that they have on their bench. So they're going to give up goals. I thought De Gea finally played well. If you look at the game, that was the biggest difference. He didn't bumble one in the goal in the first 5 seconds against Brentford. He made world-class saves like a world-class player. If he doesn't bumble that one in Brentford, it's a whole different game. The second that goes in, the heads drop, the self-esteem drop. De Gea is also just like, what am I doing? You know, it becomes a psychological game. So for me as a Chelsea fan, and you as a Spurs fan, I'm like, this is great. We might have a whole different top four. I think Liverpool are going to be fine. I think they're still going to be in the top four, but I don't know necessarily now if they're going to be second, because they've already lost so many points. And I was like, oh, it's hyperbolic to say this, but like, they have 2 out of 7 points. That they probably dropped like 7 to 12 points total last season. So unless they're going to go on this ridiculous tear, which I don't know how they're going to do that because they don't have anyone scoring goals right now, they're in trouble. They tied the team that came out from the Championship, Fulham. Then they tied an mediocre Premier League side in Crystal Palace. And then they lost to Man United, who was last in the Premier League today. So Liverpool, the question I wanted to ask you today was, who finishes higher in the Prem? Are you still thinking Liverpool will finish higher
than United?
than United. Yeah, I'm just looking at these two teams.
I think Liverpool will still right the ship, and they'll get their players back from injury and suspension, and they'll win a bunch of games they're supposed to win. But they're going to struggle. They're going to struggle in City. They're going to struggle in Spurs. They're going to struggle in Newcastle, which they're playing in two games. They're going to struggle. They're going to struggle against Arsenal. They're going to struggle against more disciplined teams that can break down their midfield, and their midfield is dog shit. Henderson is dog shit. He's bad. He's not playing well. Thiago's out. Milner's old. I think Harvey Elliott's a talent, but he can't. He's more attacking, right? So he's not playing in the pivot role. I don't think he's playing. He's not a very good defender. They need somebody. I thought not playing Fabinho was a mistake today. I thought it was so crazy that they put out Milner to play against United. The level of disrespect was appalling from Klopp, because he thought that Milner was enough, right? And Milner, obviously, technically, he knows what to do, but he's just too old to accomplish what he needs to get done. And that's harsh, right? But ultimately, you have younger players on the bench that can probably, execute what you're trying to do. Milner just seems a little off. And then Virgil van Dijk looks a shadow of himself this season. He looks poor. Like that goal that, who scored the goal? Sancho.
Rashford.
No, Sancho scored the first goal. The amount of space between Virgil van Dijk and Sancho when Sancho's standing in the middle of the box is criminal. Like, no center back should be shutting that space down. He should be at least closing it down to get a block shot in. All he did was lift his leg up and stood 6 yards away from him. It was very, very poor. I mean, he's not playing next to good defenders, but still, you know.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing. He has no one to lean on. Like,
right.
When you look at John Terry and the reason why he was so good for so long, he was like an average defender. And I know people will hate that. Like, oh, how can you say that about John Terry? Because he's an absolute Chelsea legend. But he had Ricardo Carvalho next to him for a long time. Then he had William Gallus when he came over from Arsenal. Then he had David Luiz when he was at like the peak of his fitness. So he always had like some stud next to him. He had Alex. He had just beasts next to him to help him out. And the center backs this week to me was like the talking point, because Koulibaly looked a mess against Leeds. He looked like he'd never, some of the decisions he made, his positioning was crazy. And the thing with Virgil van Dijk is like when he came into the league, played at Southampton, and when he went to Liverpool, he had some unbelievable stat where like, for 80 games, no one beat him in a one-on-one. Like, unreal stat. But since that time, he's gotten beaten a lot. So when you look at it, his average, it's a normal, I get beat as a center back one-on-one. But like, maybe we're seeing as he reverts to his mean, you know, as he reverts to the average, what he actually looks like as a player. Maybe he overachieved for a while. Also, he was out for an entire season because his knee got taken out by Jordan Pickford, and he's getting older. So Klopp must know that he has to find a situation whether they change their formation, because when I'm looking at them in a four-back, I'm like, you're way too exposed. Trent Alexander-Arnold isn't a defender. Robertson.
Gomez is not good enough.
The tackle that Rashford, Gomez came in with 2 feet and he tried to make a tackle and Rashford literally muscled through him and just like won the ball. I was like, dude, no way. The ball or the man goes, not both, and he let basically Rashford go by on a play later in the game. Gomez is not there. Van Dijk is maybe not the player he once was. Still, honestly, top five in the world center backs. But you have too much space in the back. And then when you have no cover because you have James Milner and Henderson in there, there's just space to run. Younger teams are going to get all over you. So, I mean, I'm looking at, you know, the thing for me with Liverpool, and we'll eventually stop talking about Liverpool and Man United, and that will be good for the world, I'm sure. But you look at their top five forwards, or their forwards that are listed. Salah, he will start to fire. I do believe that, okay? Jota, he's been injured. I think that he's probably got 10 to 12 goals in him in the league. Luis Diaz is still pretty unproven in the league, but I believe he's an absolute talent. Nunez, still unproven. Maybe you're right. Maybe he totally flops, but he's out for some games. And then Bobby Firmino, honestly, he should have been sent out to the farm 2 or 3 years ago. So all I'm saying is Liverpool fans are living on the assumption of the Pharaoh Salah. Because if he doesn't start firing, they may not even finish second. Like, if Salah doesn't score a certain amount of goals, they don't finish second. That's my take.
And here's the thing. We always say, no Zaha, no goals. Maybe it's no Mane, no goals. Because maybe he was the glue that was holding the attack together. I'm not just talking the front three of Firmino, Salah, and Mane. I'm talking about just Liverpool's attack as a whole, right? There's something to be said about you have to have good holding midfielders and midfielders that can play in the transition. You don't have those players, you don't win football games. Chelsea didn't have it on Saturday or Sunday, and Liverpool didn't have it today. I'm not saying that Man United, they came out with better players or they looked a little more hungry. I think they looked a little more positive on the ball. I think they exploited some of Liverpool's defensive weaknesses, but it all comes down to the midfield pairing, right? And it all comes down to being able to transition from defense to offense. You saw when with Chelsea against Spurs, they dominated that whole game. As soon as Conte came out of that game, as soon as he was injured, Spurs got that wedge. They got in there and they were able to attack. It's because you have basically another defender coming back, but he has that ability to collect the ball, look up, and make a pass, right? Better than your center backs can do, right? And he's doing it from the center of the pitch. Without that, you can't do it. You can't. It doesn't work. The Premier League, the players are too good. They're too fast. They will pick off your passes. They will convert and they will punish you. So that's the difference. That's what Liverpool needs. They need a midfielder. I'm sorry. They need to play Milner in the cup games. They need to play Henderson sparingly, keep him fresh for maybe Champions League here and there, and like to the group, get him to the group stage. But they need a world-class midfielder. And I don't think Thiago's that guy. Honestly, I'm just going to say it. I don't think Thiago's that guy. I never have thought he was. I think he played really well last season, but I think he's too injury prone, and I think he's too rash. I think he gets too many yellow cards, and I think he's too unpredictable, right? And he's good, but he's not it, right? And so they have Elliott, but he's more of an attacking midfielder, right? You saw him up the pitch, right? You saw him in the front third of the pitch. You don't see they need a center midfielder to play either in the pivot or a defensive midfielder. I'm thinking more like a Declan Rice type player who's just like in the weeds, digging balls out. Conte, Højbjerg, these guys. These are the guys. These are the unsung heroes that like don't get all the stats, but they hold that team together. I worry for Chelsea, right? I worry for their lack of Conte, their lack of Kovacic. I hear Kovacic is coming back. I worry about their ability to stop the attack while not having any forwards. I worry for Liverpool. These teams need these players. That's why I don't worry so much for Spurs, because it seems like Conte's whole premise of what he's trying to do is to have really strong midfielders and know how to just get the ball and distribute it and work hard. They got Skip. He's injured. They got Højbjerg. They got Basuma. These are like guys, you all think they're kind of the same player. They do slightly different things, but that's where they're strengthening, right? That's where they've strengthened significantly. And that may be the difference maker.
It is. If you look at the Chelsea lineup, you had Connor Gallagher, Jorginho, and Mason Mount. None of those guys are ball winners. In fact, if you watch that game and just watch Jorginho, Brendan Aaronson made him look like he'd never played soccer before. And then you look at the Liverpool lineup. You have Mount, Henderson, and Elliott. Henderson would be the ball winner there.
No, Milner, not Mount. Sorry.
Thank you. Excuse me. Milner, Henderson, Elliott. None of those guys also have any bite for me as far as being that like holder. So I'm kind of like, I'm at a loss, but I do think the lack of center holding midfielders is an issue. And that's where I think City actually does pretty well, because they got Calvin Phillips and Rodri, who I both think are just absolutely world-class. But let's get away from this game. And I actually want to talk about Arsenal for two reasons. One, because we didn't talk about Arsenal at all last episode, and John Scheimer texted me and said, "How are you not going to talk about the number one in the league?" And two, because I want you to share your stat that you shared about Arsenal having the absolute easiest schedule over the first however many games.
Yeah, I think over the course of the first 10 games or 12 games, they have the, like, might be the 16th or 17th easiest schedule. Something crazy. It might be the easiest. I don't know where we found this, but either way, we can say this about pretty much every team. The teams that are overachieving, the teams that are underachieving, the teams that are doing right where they are. It's three games into the season. We can't jump to conclusions. I think if you're an Arsenal fan, you have to take the three wins you have with a real grain of salt. You almost actually didn't really outplay Crystal Palace. You still gave up two goals to Leicester. And, of course, you smashed a championship team in Bournemouth. Let's be real here. I don't want to hear that, like, Bournemouth is, like, suddenly this next greatest thing. They barely signed a player. They've actually maybe even weakened since they've come to the Premier League. They're going back down. So I don't want to hear how great they are. They play Fulham, which will be more of a test, and then they play Aston Villa and then United, and then Everton, and then Brentford, right? So their first test to me, their first real test to me is maybe United in a couple weeks, but really it's October 1st against Spurs. That's the first test. That's it.
Arsenal look good, though. It needs to be said that they look good. And I think that they, ironically, have a holding center midfielder who you wouldn't want to go into a tackle with, because Granit Xhaka is crazy. I wouldn't want to go into a tackle with that guy. He's insane. So Arsenal, you know, I was thinking maybe Arsenal, I didn't have him in my top four. I think they're going to finish fifth. But if United, or better said, if Liverpool are on shaky ground, there could be points there where Chelsea or Spurs go in second. You know, things shift around. Because I think everyone's assumption was, okay, Liverpool is going to come in second, City will win. Now, if City had beat Newcastle this week, I would have said the league's over. Because then there's a 7-point difference in the first three games, and I don't think anyone would touch City. And I saw on ESPN that this is actually something that was shared to me. It was that 98% of people lost money on the City-Newcastle game because no one had them at 3-3. No one had them at a tie. Everyone just had City winning. So City winning was so unlikely. And if you had a parlay, for example, between City tying, Chelsea losing, and Liverpool losing, it was probably like 1 in 300. Like that, all those things should probably have never happened in the same week to those teams at the time they did. But with Arsenal, I kind of agree with you. I think Arsenal beat Fulham, and I know we're going to get into this week. I think Arsenal beat Aston Villa. I think United is definitely a test just because of the history and that it is at Old Trafford. When they play Everton, they're at home. I think Arsenal at home this year are going to be very, very good. Then they play Brentford, which is away, and Brentford did beat them last year in the first game of the season. But then they play Tottenham, and that Tottenham game is at the Emirates. I think we'll know after that game if they're a serious contender, because last year they really struggled in the top six to make a dent. They lost a lot of points to the top six. So if Arsenal can continue to beat the teams that they should beat and be competitive with top six teams, being Chelsea, Liverpool, United, City, Tottenham, then honestly, Arsenal could be challenging for top four. I do think, however, they're one linchpin away. Gabriel Jesus right now is the second coming of Jesus in London. If they lose him, I don't know where the goals come from. Maybe it's a goal by committee situation, but they've tried to do that in the past and it really hasn't worked out. So with that said,
I really thought that they looked susceptible against Crystal Palace. They didn't have the majority of the possession. The stats pretty much lined up. I felt that they were lucky to walk out of that with a 2-0 victory. Okay. I think Leicester is garbage this year. There's a fire sale at Leicester. They're going to sell Fofana and they're going to sell Madison. I don't take Leicester seriously. Nobody's taking Leicester seriously. And nobody's taking Bournemouth seriously. So I'm going to reserve my judgment for Arsenal. I'm not going to trash them. I think they're obviously a good team. Because you win the game, if you should win the games, you should win, right? On paper, you should win those games. Fine. I think Fulham are better than those. Honestly, right now, I think Fulham are better than these three other teams that they've already played. So I will be interested to see what happens against Fulham. Aston Villa, I think they'll beat Aston Villa. I think they'll beat United. I definitely think they're going to beat Everton. And I definitely think they're going to be Brentford. So, yes, they could be top of the table when they walk into, when Spurs walk into the Emirates on October 1st. So we'll see. I think they also have the easiest start of the season, which goes in their favor. So I want to hear any conspiracy theories on from Arsenal fans about how the league's conspiring to to keep them out of fourth. But yeah, well, I mean, anything can happen, right? So I also agree they're like one Thomas Partey and one Jesus injury away from being very mediocre. I don't think Thomas Partey should be even playing because I think he's a rapist. I'm just going to put that one out there. He shouldn't even be on the field. But that's neither here nor there. Also, like, I don't know what the Smith Rowe, Odegaard, like, why Smith Rowe doesn't start. I don't understand. These are like, I thought he was their best midfielder, but maybe he's just, they're just, I don't know. But, yeah.
That's something that I want AFTV to weigh in on. Like, I need an Arsenal fan to explain to me how he doesn't get on the field. I think he's phenomenal. And if I'm Smith Rowe, I'm super bummed because he hasn't gotten enough time to present a case to Gary that he needs to be on the squad. When if I was creating a team, I'd probably put him on the squad because I just think he was absolutely phenomenal last year. And I was kind of like, okay, Odegaard's okay. But now this year, season, Odegaard has been really, really fun to watch. And he's been dynamic. And in many ways, he kind of does what Smith Rowe does, but I think he does it faster. So we'll see. His ability to get in between the lines is it's really nice. And like, for example, when I look at Chelsea, we don't really have that player. Mason Mount is a different type of player. He's not that player. Odegaard's a killer, and I mean, it's the reason why he was on Real Madrid for as long as he was there. Do we want to start to look at the upcoming week?
So, match day 4. Kicking it off with, well, you know what we'll do? We'll just highlight the worthwhile games to really watch.
Let's highlight the worthwhile games and make sure we call it Arsenal's game, because I don't want Boys and Bulls to kill a man. Like, when we don't talk about Arsenal, John Scheimer, his heart flutters. So we're going to talk about Arsenal, and it's a derby. It's a London derby. So we will talk about it.
All right. Well, I mean, we got Man United, Southampton. I think United should be able to take care of Southampton. They're a little bit better than I think people are predicted. But there's not a lot going on there. Short week maybe for United. They're playing on Saturday, early morning game. I guess midday game for them. We got Chelsea versus Leicester. I think Chelsea will be fine against Leicester. Leeds-Brighton. That should be an interesting game. Leeds-Brighton. Let's talk about that. What do you think?
You know what? I have not watched... I don't think I've watched Brighton play once this season, but I do know that what Graham Potter's doing over there is exciting, and I don't see a way that he doesn't end up at Chelsea or Spurs or even United or some other big appointment, because why not? You know? So I'm going to go with Leeds. I was so impressed with what they did, and I know that they're going to be on the road at the Amex, but they looked so good. I mean, and they had 40% of the possession against Chelsea, but still got 3 goals. That doesn't happen all the time.
Yeah. I am a Leeds, I wouldn't say like supporter or anything, but I have some, you know, I support them. So I hope they, you know, come out positive. I think Graham Potter is a very good coach. He has a game plan for that team, and they seem to execute and know what they want to do. I think Trossard's pretty good. And, you know, you'd think with losing Bissouma and losing Cucurella that they'd be missing a gear, I guess, best way to describe it. But they seem fine. I think they're, like, going to push for a Europa Conference League spot this year. I think, like, set 8th or 9th is probably possible, but similar to how they finished last year. So, yeah, I hope Leeds wins, but I could easily see them just losing, Brighton squeaking out a 2-1 victory. So, you know, got Man City, Crystal Palace. I don't think Man City, I think they're going to have, like, a bounce-back game where they just kind of dominate and win, like, 4-0. I don't think you'll disagree with that. Liverpool, Bournemouth. I think Liverpool need to make a statement this game. I think Liverpool need to come out and just crush.
This is like Mario Kart. This is a banana peel.
Yeah.
If they do not crush, knowing that Arsenal beat this team 3-0, it's bad. They need to crush. They need to be clinical. And I'm excited to see it because Lord knows Mo Salah, and we're going to get to fantasy, is on the edge of being sold on fantasy.
Yeah, he's on my bubble. He's my bubble player because he's a lot of money, not producing a lot of points. Brentford, Everton. I think Everton will probably ground out another draw against Brentford, who've looked pretty pedestrian. Arsenal, Fulham. Do you want to talk about Arsenal, Fulham?
I do want to talk about Arsenal, Fulham, because they're both teams that are undefeated. Arsenal is 3 out of 3. Fulham has 5 points, so they've tied 2 and won a game. I think that this game is going to be a lot more uncomfortable for Arsenal than they consider. Fulham really, you know, when you come up from the championship, you don't have much to lose, right? Like, you're going to go out and try to get as many. Like, you're not playing in Europe. You know, if you go far in the FA Cup or any of the cups, like, whatever, you have really one focus, which is to survive. And Arsenal is now back in Europe. Arsenal is probably thinking that they have legitimate chances to win the Premier League, which honestly, okay, City's dropping points, whatever. I think it's still a dream, but maybe you believe that. But honestly, let's focus. They're going to go for top four. So it's a home game against a newly promoted side, a London side. They're probably thinking this is going to be, you know, maybe not that difficult. And I just think Mitrovic is going to have fun, and I think Fulham's a good team to watch. And I guess what I'm saying is all the pressure on this game is really on Arsenal to get all 3 points. It would also be great for them to start the season off 4-4. Like, good on them. So with that said, I think the chances of a tie are increasing. I don't think Fulham will win this, but I think it's going to be a good game. It's actually one of the games I'm most looking forward to watching.
I agree. I don't think Fulham are afraid of letting Arsenal and any opponent they play have the majority of the possession. They're fine. Their whole game plan is soak up pressure and then counter, right, with their wing players. And they have Mitrovic, who can just kind of like get these kind of, you know, sloppy header goals, or, you know, kind of poke one in. And he's a poacher. And so, yeah, I think Arsenal might struggle a little more than they struggled against Bournemouth, obviously, and against Crystal Palace. Even though Crystal Palace, I mean, Crystal Palace deserved a point out of that game, and they didn't get it. You know, they weren't clinical enough in front of goal. I do think they have this X factor in what's his name, the goalie. Arsenal's goalie.
Leno?
No. The English guy. We're bad at Ramsdale? Podcasting. What?
Ramsdale?
Ramsdale. I think he sometimes like...
Has Ramsdale been playing? Am I horrible? Oh my God, Ramsdale's been playing.
They got Turner from New England Revolution. But Ramsdale, I think, just sometimes pulls him out of his ass and keeps Arsenal in the game. And I'm not sure, and I'm still not sure if he's actually good or if like he's just like pulling them out of his, like, you know what I mean? Like, Ramsdale just seemed to come out of nowhere, like, and suddenly be this elite goalkeeper, right? I don't know. Like,
are you saying steroids?
I don't know what I'm saying. It's just like
you're the cyclist. I'm just asking.
It kind of boggles my mind. Some of the saves he makes. Maybe he's good. I don't know. But it seems like the luck's got to run out sometime. That's what it feels like.
Well, if it does, it'd be great, because getting Matty Turner some time would also be a good thing. And if you look back at this weekend, if De Gea doesn't have his world-class goal saving and he's just being more middle of the pack De Gea, letting, you know, dribbles in from Brentford, and Mendy doesn't have a complete brain fart, like, the weekend looks different, you know? I mean, when Mendy did that with Aronson, I was like, dude, you just let him crawl right in, man, you know? Because the thing with Leeds is, as long as you can soak up the pressure and deal with it, you're going to beat them. And when they came up in the championship, once everyone just, like, weathered the storm of the first 10 minutes of the track stars running around, you're going to be good. So, Arsenal-Fulham, what's your score prediction?
I think Arsenal will still win this game. I'm hoping for, like, a 2-2 draw, but I think Arsenal will win 2-1, especially because they're at home. If they had to go play away, maybe I'd go for a 2-2 draw. But I think Arsenal will still win this game. I think they're going to win. I think they may win out until they play Spurs, and then we'll see where Spurs are at, and then I can make my prediction. But they have an easy schedule. They have a favorable schedule.
They do, but it's the Prem. I think Fulham may tie, and if they do, it's going to be a scoring tie, which is why I'm excited to watch. Or I think, honestly, Arsenal's going to win big. Like, I think they could beat them by multiple goals, like 3-1, 4-1 type thing. So we'll see.
I got Wolves, Newcastle. Wolves struggling to score goals. Newcastle looked a lot better this week, tying Manchester City. The game is at, I assume it's at the Molyneux. it is at the Molyneux. I think Newcastle will, they'll play them tough, but I think Wolves are harder to play at home than most teams. And it'll end up in like a, I think a 1-1 draw.
I don't really want to talk about the Nottingham Forest Tottenham game. I think you guys are just going to beat them, but maybe there's something to talk about there. But the thing I do want to talk about is West Ham. You were all over West Ham last year calling them
frauds.
No, I guess that was Shampton, but yeah, frauds. You call everyone frauds though. So it's tough to decipher, but yes, frauds. And this season they are dead last. They have -5 goals and they haven't won a game. So I do think what's coming to the top is the cream is not coming to the top. And David Moyes is being shown for who he is. I remember hearing about when he was at United and like their training sessions, he wouldn't even like take them seriously. He was just like completely joking around because he had taken over for, came from Everton, taken over for Sir Alex, and Sir Alex had like dubbed him like, okay, this is okay, you can take over for me. So I feel like he felt like he had the job locked down for at least 10 years. And I just remember, you know, hearing these anecdotes that he was just such a joker, wouldn't take anything serious. He wasn't the gaffer that I think you need to be at a big club to, you know, kind of create the discipline and you lead as the leader. So it wouldn't surprise me for David Moyes being sacked by Christmas. If they're in relegation by the end of September, he's probably getting sacked because this is a team that has been uber competitive with the other big teams in the Premier League the last three or four seasons. So if he's still in the bottom three, he's by the end of September, he's sacked. I just wanted to throw that out there.
Well, they may have lost their first three Prem games, but they won their Europa Conference League playoff leg.
Who did they play?
Viborg. Viborg. Oh,
cool.
They won 3-1.
So anyways, like I said, if he's still in the bottom three at the end of September, I don't care if he's beating Viborg or Cyborgs, he's probably going to get sacked.
Viborg or Cyborgs. Yeah, I agree with you. I don't think Jarrah Bowen had quite the impact that he had in revelation that he was last season. Maybe Souček and Declan, maybe Declan Rice has his eyes on a different prize, and that prize may be playing at a top four club in Champions League.
The prize is World Cup, being a baller, and then getting sold in January to not West Ham.
And I actually think that Mikel Antonio does not need to be starting Premier League games. I think he's off the mark, and thinks that new signing, Samaka, whatever his name is, needs to start. That's my, you know, 10,000-foot West Ham analysis.
Take.
Yeah. I mean, I think they're like a mid-table club. I bagged on them last year because I was like so sick of like all the praise that David Moyes was getting. I knew they were a sham, and they were putting all their eggs in the Europa League basket, and then they lost it. So, and they fell like far out of, instead of chasing fourth or chasing fifth or whatever it was, they chased the Europa League and they lost it, and then they fell to seventh. And I think it really hurt them being in two competitions, or being in Europe basically, and then all the other competitions. And I think they're going to, maybe something similar will happen this year, but I actually think that they're going to lose a key player. And I don't, you know, it's probably going to be Declan Rice. Yeah.
Declan Rice has to go after this summer, especially with Conte getting a little bit older, and he's been linked to Chelsea literally since he was born because his dad's, I think he's like a season ticket holder. Neither here nor there. I think that if you look at all the teams, they are the team to me that is the most underperforming. Because Liverpool and United are eventually going to pop up. I'm not too worried about Wolves. I think they're fine. Leicester maybe, but I think Leicester's now, you know, somewhere between 10 to 15. But West Ham, for me, they haven't really changed what they had on the field last year. I think that they still have, on paper, probably top 8, top 9, and they're sitting in the bottom after the first three games. Now, maybe they've had a tough run of games. That could be true. They played City on the first day. That's brutal. Aaron Holland, you know, had his debut against them. Then they lost to Then they lost to Nottingham, right? A team that's just come up from the Championship. Then they lost to Brighton. Now Brighton is a good team, but you at least want to tie that. So it's not good. Aston Villa is going to be a tough one. Then you guys play them after. It just could be a situation where, you know, Aston Villa, then you, then Chelsea plays them. Newcastle's not an easy game these days. Everton, if that's at Goodison. So, point being, I think David Moyes may be the first one to get fired, strictly because he is the team that is the lowest that I think has the highest amount of expectation on the shoulders. So that was just something to, you know, keep an eye on.
I actually think, you know, the first one fired might be Gerard, because Aston Villa signed some players and they're underperforming. I think they getting beat by Bournemouth and then getting beat by Crystal Palace is a bad look. They wanted to start the season off strong. You know, they got Carlos. They've got Coutinho now. They've got, who else have they got? They got Ings, Ollie Watkins, you know, Tyrone Mings. That team should be solid. That team should be a solid mid-table club. And to lose to Bournemouth, newly promoted, they may be flying high first game of the season. And to only beat Everton 2-1, they should have five to 7 points at this point in the season. And they look like they're going to struggle. If they struggle and they're in like 14th place, you know, 16th place, I think Gerrard's the first one to go. But yeah, that's, I mean, it could be Gerrard, it could be, Moyes. I think
maybe they'll be fired on the same day in like a group call.
Maybe they'll just swap places. Right.
I mean, weirder things have happened in the Prem.
Right.
This has been a very interesting Prem season to see City drop points, to see where Liverpool is. Arsenal hasn't surprised. I figured they would take these first three games. Do you want to look super quickly at fantasy and we can decide how we're going to try to beat Ozatik?
I a lot of people did really poorly in fantasy this week. I saw it on Twitter that like it was an unbelievably poor week for people because just like none of the top players scored any points. I think like the average score was like 40 points for most people, maybe less.
Yeah. What does it say here? The highest was 118. The average was 48. And I had 65. So I went from 14th to 10th. And Darwin's theory, Will Hayden, that doesn't have Darwin, once again, weird, calling you out, Will, is still flying at the top with 223. Nick Bailey is in 200. Oz Atik with Arkansas is at 196. Jeff, where are you?
Wait,
Diego is in 9th. You are in 16th. Whoosh. Shush. It's tough out there. I'm thinking I've got Salah in the captain, which whatever. I don't know. I think I'm going to keep Salah just because I think you got to keep Salah. But I don't know.
I think there's a lot of mediocrity in the middle of the table here between like basically fourth to 17th. Everybody's kind of within 20 points. So I think we're maybe calling this a little early, but. Yeah, I mean, Darwin's theory, look at that, 223. I mean, that's taking the early lead right there, commanding early lead.
You know who I need to get, and I need to figure out who I'm going to sell to get? I got to get Zaha. I got to have those vibes. What a baller. And, like, he's 90% of the chances that, like, Crystal Palace has to score comes through him. And Crystal Palace is annoying and are kind of constantly, like, you know, nick points from the big teams and beat other teams here or there. So I feel like he may be a guy I need to get. And Nick Bailey has him. Nick's got a nice team. Diego's team is one of the, like I said, I constantly call it out as being a great team. It just has not panned. Like, it hasn't done, I think, what it's supposed to do. But we'll see. Having Mendy also this week was brutal because the guy literally kicked the ball in his own goal. And then he was so angry after. And I'm like, dude, you can't blame any field players. Just boot the ball out of bounds. Don't get Brendan Aaronson'd. So, anyways.
Yeah, I think the average, look, if you look at the scores, like the average scores for most people in our league, it was pretty poor. I mean, Nick Bailey only beat everybody because he had Zaha on the team, pretty much. That's it.
The last thing I will say is Molly. I think Diego told Molly to put Koulibaly on her team, and then Koulibaly got -2 points because he got a red card and he got scored on 3 times. So I think Diego is telling his girlfriend to purposely tank her team.
Yeah, it's not kind.
It's been said.
Not kind. It's not very kind.
It's a darker art. I'm not used to that. You know, Diego takes fantasy very seriously, I see. He's trying to tank. He's like subliminally saying, like, get Koulibaly.
I think he was telling us that via text, and I said that was I advised him not to do that. I think I said Koulibaly is not really a good fantasy player. Like, he had that one game where he scored a worldie, I think, against Spurs. But besides that, he's not going to score you a lot of points unless they're getting a ton of clean sheets. But even that's not going to – you got to have scoring defenders. That's basically what you need to do. Or ones that give a lot of assists, like Trent Alexander-Arnold and Reece James. So
I saw Eric Chahone. He was down coaching the high school team, and I, like, went by and saw he and this guy, Brian, who he used to coach with. And I was like, Chahone, dude, you always make a team, and then you don't look at it for the rest of the season. Like, what's the deal? He's like, oh, yeah, it's too much, you know, like what everyone says, oh, fantasy's too much time. Okay, whatever. You're going to spend 3 hours on Instagram anyways, like everyone else in the world. And Chahone had sent me this thing from another fantasy about how they do the payout, but I think what our payout should be, because I'm going to give $100 to the winner, right? Those are $100 of my hard-earned money. But what I think it should be is the last place team person has to pay the first place person the $100, and everyone else is Gucci. So I'm saying on mic, if you like it, let me know. I just think it's the most, like, I want fantasy to be Hunger Games.
That's,
you know?
So savage. Really wanna... That's so savage.
Yeah.
How do you get that person to be accountable, though, that last place person?
So what you do is, if everyone at the beginning of the season sends me $100, and I just put it in escrow, essentially. And then at the end of the season, I give everyone back their $100 so they feel good, except person one gives the 22nd person gives it to the first person.
I like it. It almost makes me feel like I'm putting money away in, like, a savings account, because I'll forget about it, and then I'm getting paid.
Exactly.
Like,
and then all of a sudden you get $100.
Yeah.
And then if you win, you get $200. Fantastic. And if you lose, you get no money back. So I think it's hard to start that now, because everyone sees where they are. Like, it's going to be hard to convince Chahone to do it, because he realizes he's not going to win. But he also may not be last. So I don't know. We'll see.
Well, Molly's right in the last place right now. So she's probably not loving that if she ever listens to this. She'll probably get the info straight from Diego. So... she might be sending us angry text.
Is he going to bend the rules? Is he going to bend it?
Yeah, he may bend the rules. He actually, I don't know, he'll scheme something up. I don't know.
I hope he schemes. If she doesn't listen, if you don't listen to this, you might get schemed. And that's your own fault for not listening to the Boys and
Bullets. Schemed or scammed, whatever it may be.
No, you get scammed in life. You get schemed with the Boys and Bullets.
Because if you're not listening, well, if you're listening, you're in on the scheme.
Exactly.
Yeah. If you're not listening, schemed.
I feel like a lot of people wouldn't want to send me that money. They'd be like, I don't know. That sounds like a Ponzi scheme. Oh, send me $100. Have your friends sign up. Get three more friends to sign up. And then they send me money. It does sound kind of weird. Right?
It's kind of Ponzi-esque, but it's not really, because you're not like paying people out with the other people's money.
It's true. I'm just paying myself. And then they see me and I'm on a cruise. I'm like, yeah, bitches, fantasy. Jeff and Jarrett go to the Caribbean for a week. How'd you guys afford this? Oh, we started fantasy a couple years ago. We got a bunch of people to join. Now every year we get a payday.
Yeah. It's like, well, if we collected, I mean, that's $2,200. Imagine what we could do with $2,200. It's kind of like a loan. We have to pay him back, but not right away. The season's a long season. That's kind of nice.
Yeah. And if there's like a global pandemic, the season could extend.
It's just...
we should do it next year, but we should do it through NFTs, and it'll be like a multi-sig wallet. So we'll all go in, and then everyone has to sign at the end to release the funds.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I like it. It's a, we'll have some real tokenomics behind it, too. Boys and Bolos coin.
Oh, a deep roadmap.
So much utility.
Anyways, if you understand half what we're saying, we love you. Jeff, that's all I got.
That's all I got, too. Ciao.
Ciao.
Thanks for listening to the Boys and Bolos podcast. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Patreon, Twitch, at Boys and Bolos.
If you'd like to be a guest, please reach out. You can hit us on any of the social media accounts that Jeff just mentioned, or email us directly at boysandbolos@gmail.com.
Thanks for listening, and see you next time.